Order. Senator Vickerman is not here and tied up in a meeting, but I think we'll get started. Looks like we have some people all ready to go. Senator Sieben, you're having a busy day today.
Yes, like we all do.
Okay, well, it looks like you're here to talk about Senate File 956. Would you go ahead and introduce that to us?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Senate File 956 is actually pretty simple. It would require, or it would ask the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Health study the effects of antimicrobial. I'll just skip that word. Pest control mechanisms. So essentially what has happened here is Representative Rick Hansen in the House sent me this bill and explained to me that there are national companies that are advertising and doing work in Minnesota to spray for mold or to spray for to try to get rid of mold in homes. And so what this bill would do is ask the Department of Ag and Health to work together to have a study to look into the not only the effectiveness of this, but also on potential licensing procedures for these operations. And I had a little bit of spare time here before the committee, and so I should have made copies for you guys, but Representative Hansen photocopied some of the yellow pages that showed these mold services. And so I called one of them, OneDayMoldRemoval.com. They're based in Fort Collins, Colorado, and I talked to the guy for a little while and told him that I had mold in my house, which I don't hope I don't, but it was really quite interesting, to tell you the truth. They said that they, for a 2,500 square foot house, they could come out, spray the house for about $3,500, and they had a double guarantee that the mold would be removed for a year. And then I asked too about what type of chemicals were used in the spray in the application, and he said that it was a proprietary mixture, but there is hydrogen peroxide and quaternary ammonia used, and it kills all microbial activity, and it will neutralize mold growth. And I think my message to you members is that it's probably a good idea for the Department of Ag and the Department of Health to look into whether this is effective or not. And here with me today is Nancy Johnson, who's from the city of Columbia Heights, who has some firsthand experience with not this particular company that I mentioned, but another company that does this. And I should also mention that it appears as though most of the companies that are doing this are located outside the state of Minnesota. And when I asked OneDayMoldRemoval.com, the gentleman, if they were licensed, and because he was in Fort Collins, if they had licensed applicators in Minnesota, he said no. And I said, oh, you know, aren't there any licensure requirements? And he said, no, we operate in 48 states, every state except for Louisiana and Texas. And then when I looked on their website, and he said those are the two states that require licensure of these type of products. So it seems, and I haven't contacted those two states, but it seems that since they probably looked into this, the companies are no longer operating in those states for whatever reasons. But with that, perhaps we could hear from Ms. Johnson, and she could explain her personal experience.
Senator Sieben, I'm going to interrupt for a minute. I want the record to show our quorum is present. Now go ahead.
Thank you.
Johnson. My name is Nancy Johnson, and I do live in Columbia Heights, and our situation, we had a lot of water coming in through our roof because of a botched shingling job a few years ago, and it rained one late, early Monday morning for about 4 hours. We had water coming out through the walls, the windows, the doors, because the roof wasn't covered well enough after they took the shingles off. And so we obviously called the contractor and the subcontractor. We also called, they tried to get a hold of their insurance companies, but in the meantime, we went through the Yellow Pages looking for a company that would help us with this water problem because everything was soaked and we couldn't shut our doors. And so we came across a company that, a nationally known company, if you heard the name, you would recognize it instantly, and they franchise their business. And those franchises, as we learned, hire independent contractors. Well, that company came to our house on Tuesday afternoon. They were probably there. There were two people that were there, probably at the most for 2 hours. On the phone, they quoted us a price of $1,500. So one person was running around looking for fans to dry out our house, commercial fans. And the other person was there. He cut some holes in our sheetrock upstairs and down, pulled back the carpet, and then he started spraying this product around our house. And he didn't give any information as to what was in the product, what the chemicals were, but he said it would help with the mold. And so he left no information at all. Before he left, he told me that I owed him $4,000. And I said, well, your check, when I called, it would be about $1,500. And he said, well, we had to do a little bit more, so you have to write a check for $4,000. And I said, well, what if I don't write you a check for $4,000? And he said, well, we're going to take all the fans away upstairs and down. And you can imagine how that made me feel when I wrote out a check for $4,000. I called and talked to a couple of the insurance agents, and the next day I stopped payment on that check. And later it was adjusted down to $1,500. The insurance companies actually started dealing with the collection agency and then this company. But the whole point of this was, so he was there for almost 2 hours and, you know, said that that should help. You know, we cut the holes in the wall and did this. But after two months, we moved out of our house, and we were out for 8.5 months. Our whole house had to be gutted. And the reason is that once you have water in your walls, your windows, your sheetrock, your insulation, especially fiberglass insulation, if you haven't gotten it dried out within probably 24 to 48 hours, you've lost it. And it was just an absolute waste of money for us to even have them there. And actually, the company that came after to supposedly paint the walls and stuff, they also were just, that was a bill that was just worthless. People don't understand what happens when you have water intrusion in your home. And we called several contractors, too, and they said, well, the insulation between the walls, the sheetrock and the studs, that will dry. Well, when the studs were opened up, we had mold all over the insulation upstairs and down. And so that company did absolutely nothing for us. And we have an engineer that works with our homeowners group. Well, we have quite a few engineers, actually, but one of them sent some comments to me about the bills that Senator Sieben and Representative Hansen have introduced. And he has investigated over 500 homes that have had construction defects and water intrusion. And his comment was that he agreed that this industry needs some type of regulation. He says, I routinely see homeowners that get gouged with these projects, which have limited or no value. And our homeowners group very much supports this legislation and hope that it will pass this year.
Any questions from the committee? Senator Wergen?
Thank you. Ms. Johnson, when your house got wet, did you work through your insurance company for who to hire to take care of it or what the cost would be, or did you hire someone and then go to the insurance company?
Well, that rainstorm that came through affected thousands of homes in the Twin Cities. The subcontractor and contractor were trying to get a hold of their insurance agent, who did not return a call for several days. And we called our insurance company, and they said you should file a claim through your subcontractor. But they said, you know, you could get somebody out there to try and deal with the moisture, the water. What we also found out during this process, and this was back in 2000, is that the insurance adjusters that we had from our insurance company really didn't know anything about this issue as well. And so we actually ended up, my husband and I actually ended up firing the company that came in after the remediation or the microbial application was done. But they came in and started painting wet walls and scraping ceilings, and we had high moisture content in our walls. We pulled the baseboards, and there was mold all around them. So we fired that company, and we called the Department of Health and talked to their environmental services group, and they have a list of people. They don't endorse anyone, but I really think that they should do some sort of an endorsement there. But we happened to come to Paul Elringer, who is a registered engineer, and he started sort of handling the case, and the insurance company was very happy to have him oversee everything after that.
Ms. Johnson, don't you wonder how many other people got fooled that you didn't hear about?
Well, and I think about all the people that just, on a heavy rain, when the water runs in, there's overloading somewhere and the water backs up, or the sump pump, and they open the yellow pages just like we probably did and look for somebody to come and say, can you help us dry out this house? So I'm sure it's still happening.
Any other questions? Senator?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Just in my mind, it sounds more like you were dealing with a bad business person. How would this have changed, if this had already taken effect, how would that have changed what happened to you? You were dealing with some unscrupulous business person, weren't you? Or should this be going through a Commerce Committee or...
Senator Scogin, Mr. Chair and Senator Scogin, I think that the first step in potential regulation of the industry to see, as the bill outlines, it would test the efficacy of whether these treatments are even effective. But the first step is studying it to see what regulations there are on a national level and what other states are doing, and also looking at through various sources of information to see, again, like I said, about the effectiveness of it. So what this bill does is directs the Department of Health and Ag to work with the University of Minnesota to look at all these issues and then issue a report back to us. So I think, depending on what that report says, there may be further need for regulation or, licensure requirements, et cetera. But first, I think it would be wise to pass this bill just to kind of get a broader overview of what the issue is and what state regulation would be necessary.
Any other questions?
Follow-up, there's no fiscal note with this? I mean, it wouldn't cost anything to do this study, or?
Senator Vickerman and Senator Scogin, I'm not quite sure on that, actually. I don't have a fiscal note. I haven't been given one.
Okay.
Senator Sieben, we're going to find out here in a minute.
Mr. Chairman, I just did receive a preliminary one, and that's why Senator Sieben hasn't received it yet. I was just talking with the Department of Ag. They're estimating at around $15,000 of cost for them one time, and we can talk with them about whether this would probably come out of the pesticide account within the agricultural fund. We could maybe have some ongoing conversations with them if they're able to absorb that or not. And also on the preliminary fiscal note, the Department of Health listed $10,000. So maybe as we talk with Senator Berglund, we'll have to see if these agencies can maybe, with that small amount, sometimes we can talk to agencies and see if they can absorb that. But at least the preliminary fiscal note did have a small cost.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I need a motion from somebody. Senator Coobley?
Yeah, Ms. Chair, I would move that Senate File 956 be recommended to pass and placed on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Senator Coobley, the motion is going to have to be this. You move to pass Senate File 956. It needs to be referred to Health and Human Services, because if you look on the front line, it says agriculture and it says health. So I've been informed it has to go to health because you've already been to ag. So, okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Keep up the good work, because when you get a little older, people try to cheat on you a little bit.
Thank you, Mr. Chair members.
Probably does have to go there since the Commissioner of Health.
Next bill up, Senator Bach. At Senate File 597.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. Bill in front of you, Senate File 597, is requesting a $300,000 grant to the Boys Fort Band of Chippewa to study the feasibility of constructing a cellulosic ethanol plant in northern Minnesota. This issue really first came to our attention last fall when members of the Range delegation were given the opportunity to see a preview, I think that this committee seen, from Natural Resources and Research Institute on the work that the study that they had been doing on the idea of cellulosic ethanol. And the band was very, very interested in it and always interested in economic development. So we started thinking about what is the possibility, the feasibility, I guess, of doing it in an area. What is our transportation infrastructure? The other obstacles that might be in the way. So the band and the IRRRB partnered up to do an original a small piece of work on this, kind of a scoping document about what a feasibility study might look at. And together we spent $50,000 on a scoping document for to take a look at what kind of things we might study if we could get the money to do a full-blown feasibility study. So, Mr. Chairman, that's kind of where we've come from and how we got here. And I have with me the tribal chairman from the Boys Fort Band and their business development person, Mr. Datko, and I'm sure they'd like to speak to the bill.
Welcome to the committee and state your name for the record.
Kevin Lisi, tribal chairman, Boys Fort Band at Chippewa. Good afternoon, Chairman Vickerman and senators. I'm Kevin Lisi. In our government headquarters, and many of the Boys Fort people live on 104,000 acres of land located approximately 40 miles south of International Falls and 20 miles west of Orr, Minnesota. Another sector of our reservation is located on Lake Vermilion near the town of Tower. Some of you have heard of this part of our reservation because of the location of our largest business enterprise, Fortune Bay Resort Casino, and our growing accolades of our golf course, the Wilderness at Fortune Bay. Some of you also may have heard of us due to the high achievement levels at the Net Lake School, where students are exceeding state and national standards in math and reading. I'm often asked by legislators, and this may be one of the questions today, is how much are our per capita payments to band members? And the answer is zero. The Boys Fort Band does not have per capita payments. Instead, we reinvest our revenues into infrastructure, education, health care, and other tribal government services and programs. The Boys Fort Band strategic business plan focuses on diversifying and strengthening the economy of our region. For example, we own and operate WELY, End of the Road Radio in Ely, Power Rain Car Wash Systems in Tower, and convenience stores in near Tower and in Net Lake. The need to diversify is due to the high unemployment rate in our area. When I took office 3 years ago, we had a 40% unemployment rate on the reservation. And we still have much work to do, but I'm happy to report that we're making good progress in area of unemployment. Today, business and our development corporation employ over 700 people, and that's including the government, our tribal government, and businesses. 75% of these are non-Indians from the surrounding communities. We are successfully partnering with local, county, state and federal governments on a wide variety of ventures. For example, we've worked closely with the Minnesota Department of Transportation on a unique financing package that leveraged state transportation dollars against federal, tribal, road and bridge funding to complete road and bridge projects in northeastern Minnesota, ahead of schedule and under budget. But we are here to talk today about a new collaboration with tremendous potential for the future. We are proposing a cellulosic biofuels demonstration facility in Net Lake. This is an exciting concept for us because it combines our experience and collaboration with other governments and utilizes the sustainable natural resources of our tribal lands and culture in a project with numerous and vital benefits. We believe this project will diversify the economy in northeastern Minnesota, enhance the environment, and increase our energy independence. I'd like to introduce Andy Datko, the CEO of Boyce Ford Development Corporation, who will explain the project to you and briefly describe the benefits we see for the state of Minnesota. Andy and I are both looking forward to answering your questions about this exciting project. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's hear from you and give me your name for the record and welcome to committee.
Thank you. My name is Andy Datko. I'm the CEO of Boyce Fort Development Corporation, which is the business division of the Boyce Fort Band of Chippewa. Thank you, Chairman Vickerman and Senators, for the opportunity to speak with you today. The Boyce Fort Band of Chippewa intends to develop a demonstration facility on the reservation that will convert cellulosic biomass into biofuels such as ethanol and butanol. We want to work with the state and our neighboring communities to make this project a success so that it benefits everyone in the region. We are here today seeking $300,000 in state assistance for a technical and economic feasibility study for this project. This project would improve energy self-sufficiency on the reservation and throughout northeastern Minnesota by using locally available renewable resources. This would reduce our dependence on foreign petroleum for transportation and heating. And because petroleum and other fossil fuels contribute to global warming, using more renewable biofuels will reduce harmful carbon emissions and help the environment. Other key benefits of the project include the creation of new jobs, the strengthening of the band's economy, as well as that of the region. As you know from your work on this committee, the market for biofuels is growing exponentially, and biofuels are now emerging as a vital technology for our state and our nation. The study we are proposing will examine many factors, including an assessment of the sustainable biomass resources on tribally controlled lands and within the surrounding area, resources such as logging residues, forest trimmings, pulp mill and sawmill waste, and processed municipal waste. Optimal project size, configuration, and location, technology options and system configurations, siting and environmental considerations and permitting criteria, end market options for the types of biofuels to be produced, possible synergistic alliances with energy users and biomass producers, leading to additional economic benefits for the region, and a pro forma financial projection and long-term business plan. We have done extensive preliminary research into this emerging field with the assistance of SEH Consulting Engineers and the Natural Resources Research Institute, which is part of the University of Minnesota in Duluth. We have prepared a detailed scoping document that identifies specific technologies to be examined in greater detail, with the end result being the selection of the most appropriate technology and the development of a demonstration plan. And by the way, an executive summary of that scoping document is included in your packets. The scoping document indicates that cellulosic biofuels technologies are being developed at a rapid pace and that the time is right to develop a demonstration-scale cellulosic biofuels facility in Minnesota. In keeping with the deep respect and spiritual relationship Native Americans have with their environment, Boyce Ford is committed to generating sustainable economic development that is environmentally appropriate. We know that corn-derived ethanol is an important fuel, but there is already beginning to be competition for corn as fuel versus corn as food. Our proposal would generate energy from renewable local resources that do not hold value as competing vital resources such as farm commodities. Cellulosic sources of ethanol, butanol, and other biofuels offer greater long-term potential for energy independence. Cellulosic feedstock sources are much more common and readily available. The research shows that the conversion efficiencies of cellulose to ethanol are much higher than that of corn-derived ethanol. We intend to develop a project that is environmentally suitable and sized appropriately for the available feedstock resources. The scale of this project will be on the order of 1 million to 4 million gallons of biofuels produced annually. We believe that this size facility can be operated on a sustainable basis with locally produced renewable sources of biomass feedstock. This project provides the opportunity to strengthen partnerships among the band, the state, the federal government, local counties and towns. And as Boys Fort has proven, successful collaboration between governmental units is often a catalyst for economic growth in the region. We are therefore requesting your assistance in the spirit of cooperation and partnership to help move this project forward. Boys Fort has already committed substantial time and effort to the project. We strongly believe that upon completion of the feasibility study, we will be able to leverage the state and the band's commitment to obtain federal funds to develop the demonstration plant. And we do know that the federal government is putting substantial resources into renewable energy, and some of those resources are being set aside specifically for projects of this type on Indian lands. Thank you very much for your time today. Chairman Lisi and I welcome any questions that you may have. We also have with us George Johnson, a senior scientist from SEH Incorporated, if there are any specific technical questions on the project. Thank you.
Senator Bach, I talked earlier with the gentleman down there, and we're going to move into renewable energy. We just are. You know, it's going to be all kinds. I'm a corn lover, but that I know that that's going to compete with food in time. That's going to have to change. What I kind of liked about this is it's one step in another direction other than corn, and it's small enough so that you can do it without taking all the woods in whole northern Minnesota. I think that's easier, and I believe in switchgrass, but when you got to have 10 to 15,000 acres of switchgrass, that's going to be kind of tough to do, at least down where I live. So this is just one of the new things that we're going to do, and I hear a rumor that there may be another one, something like this, coming before this committee also. $300,000 isn't a lot of money. It is a lot of money for maybe me and you, but when you look in this big picture and what this can do, it isn't a lot of money. Do you have a casino?
Chairman Vickerman, yes, we do have. We own and operate Fortune Bay Resort Casino, which is located on Lake Vermilion.
I just bring that up because I was in this committee before and told the tribes, don't always count on gambling money to survive on, because it's going down. Gambling's going down. I don't care what anybody, I know I'm right. Pull tabs are going down. It's just the way it happens to be. So now we need to look at a different direction to help you and your tribes up there to work. I think it's a wonderful idea. We'll see how we can do, but I'm going to have to go to Senator Hand. Did you ever hear it? Senator Hand?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just a question. the bill asks for the money for a feasibility study. But in reading the testimony and hearing the testimony, it sounds as if the presumption is that the feasibility study is going to result in that this is a feasible project. And so I just want some clarification. Are we... What would be the conditions under which the study would suggest we oughtn't to proceed with this? Are there any conditions, or are we just assuming that we're going to find a way to do this? So we just, this is the initial step to kind of get things rolling. Okay. I just want to be clear in my mind whether we're talking about investigating something with the idea that we could prove it to be a good thing or prove it to be a not good thing, or if we're just beginning to do something that we've already decided is a good thing.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hanen, a couple of answers to that. From the initial research that has been done, we're very confident that this is a feasible project. However, there are a number of questions that need to really be delved into in a great deal of more detail, specifically identifying the sources of biomass to a greater level of specificity, determining which specific technology is most appropriate. And we have preliminarily identified a dozen or more technologies that hold promise, But we have to look at each one of those and determine which one is going to work with the type of woody biomass that is available in our region. So we see the feasibility study being geared more towards determining specific project size, specific technology, and the configuration of the system to most appropriately convert the biomass that we have available. So it, you know, I suppose it's conceivable that the feasibility study would come back and say it simply isn't feasible, but based on what we've learned so far, we don't think that that's there's any you know, reasonable expectation that we're going to find that.
Your hand, follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you. Well, that's what it seemed like from the testimony, from the reading, that there was this presumption that this would go forward. Is there going to be any effort in the feasibility study to determine what price petroleum fuels will have to be at before this becomes economically sustainable without continued tax support to finance the ongoing operation? I mean, my understanding and my sense of all the biofuels is that you can certainly do them, but they're not economically sound until petroleum reaches a price that makes it competitive, that the cost for these biofuels are always going to be more expensive because the one thing being the reduced amount of energy content in these alcohol-based fuels versus petroleum. But is that part of the study to determine what is going to be that economic climate that's going to have to obtain before these things become economically sustainable without taxpayer support?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hanning, yes, that's correct. Part of the study will be a detailed pro forma, financial projections, and a business plan, and that will include an assessment of what level price of petroleum fuels would need to be at for break-even, as well as looking at the transportation costs, the cost to operate the facility, and the cost of obtaining the cellulosic feedstock. So all of those things would be factors in determining the feasibility of the project.
And Mr. Just one last. Is the study going to be presented back to this committee when it's completed? Is that part of the process here?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hanning, we would certainly welcome the opportunity to do that.
Another gentleman down in the end would like to add. I need your name for the record. Welcome to committee.
Thank you, Chairman Vickerman. My name is George Johnson. I am the scientist from SEH who's done much of the preliminary work for the Boyce Fort proposal.
Members, I think you have to look at all those biofuels. They maybe aren't all money makers, but look at what they clean up, the air and everything else, create jobs and everything else that goes along with it. I don't think you'll ever see cheap fuel. That's my own personal opinion. I might hope I'm wrong, but I don't think we ever will. I look at this as another thing that we can do other than all the other things we're trying. If you're willing to do it, hopefully we can find some money here to help you with the study. As I said before, that study could also go. There's more woods up there than just over where you are. On the other side, there's a lot of woods. And when I first thought about this, I thought, gosh, I hope they don't go in there and cut all the trees down. But that wasn't, I got corrected on that. You're just using the scraps and what's pushed out of the way, and you're not taking lumber trees anyway. Am I right?
Senator Vickerman, that is correct. The intention of this project is to take waste wood or scrap wood, sawdust, shavings, tree trimmings from utility lines, forest thinnings, material that is not valuable as lumber. And so we do not believe that it will negatively impact the forest industry looking at the initial material. And in fact, some of the research that we've looked at from the Department of Energy says there is a vast supply of excess waste wood in this country, particularly in the Northeast United States.
And then I look at this feasibility study to tell us how large it should be. I think we're going to have some smaller plants and maybe different parts of the state than great big ones, because you got to get the material to. That even goes along with grass. You have to get the material and have enough to go along. Any other questions? Any further comments, Senator Bach?
Mr. Chairman, you all put more money in the tax bill for veterans than you're going to put in this bill for this project.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chair, I'd move that Senate File 597 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Ag Omnibus Budget Bill.
That's the motion that I was looking for. Senator Scoy moves that Senate File 597 be recommended to pass in the third for possible inclusion in Omnibus Budget Bill. And then we'll take it from there. So any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Now, one last bill, gentlemen, and then we can be out of here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senators.
Are we for this bill?
Senator File 655.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate File 655 is a bill that does a couple of things. One is that it increases the fee on fertilizer by 40 cents a ton and directs that that money shall be used for research and fertilizer, and it also sets up a Minnesota Agricultural Fertilizer Research and Education Council. Now, I'm going to go through the bill step by step, but before I do that, I want the committee to understand that there was a task force that met about a year and a half ago that Senator Vickerman and I were on. The House was represented by Representative Junkie, and I forgot who else, but all the major agricultural groups were part of this task force. We met several times to try to come up with a plan for raising some money to do critical research on fertilizer, keeping in mind that fertilizer is expensive. Farmers should learn how to use just the right amount, no more than they actually need, and also the environmental considerations that we're facing today, the new regulations and so forth, it seemed appropriate that we needed some additional resources. So what we came up with was a 40 cent per ton fee that I already mentioned, and that figures out to about 4 to 8 cents per acre, roughly. It's a fairly small amount of money, but it will raise an estimated $880,000. Now, if you take the bill out, it's Senate File 655, and you go to page 1, the first section deals with something I haven't mentioned yet. On line 1.11, it says an exemption. A permit and safeguard is not required for a person who stores on the person's own property and for the person's own use up to 6,000 gallons of liquid commercial fertilizer. We drew the line there because there's quite a few farmers that have storage facilities on their farms, usually just to hold liquid fertilizer for a few days before they actually plant it, or use it in their planter or pre-plant or post-plant application. And we just didn't want to trouble those small storage facilities with any additional government regulation. On Section 2, talks about the Minnesota Agricultural Fertilizer Research and Education Council and identifies a membership. The council has 12 voting members, and you can see from the list there the various farm organizations that are represented at the bottom of page 1. Go to page 2. The continued list of organizations that will be on this council. Line 2.7, you'll see the council members shall serve for 3-year terms. Down on line 2.11, the council will meet at least once per year with all related expenses reimbursed by the member's sponsoring organization or by members themselves. So there's no cost to the state of Minnesota at this for this council. On line 2.14, it identifies the powers and duties of the council. They must review applications and select projects to receive agricultural fertilizer research and education program grants. Down on line 2.21, you'll note that on January 1st, 2008, the council may select the commissioner or another person it considers fit to perform all the administrative duties related to the program. The commissioner is responsible for all fiscal and administrative duties in the first year and may use up to 8% of program revenues to offset costs incurred. I'm going to stop here and explain a problem we had last year when I brought this bill up. I was the author of it last year. The the cost of administration identified by the Department of Agriculture was so high that it seemed unbelievable, and we stumbled along here trying to figure out another way to do it. And I believe the soybean producers volunteered to help administer this program and handle a refund program, which I'll mention in a moment. So this is leaving open the door for somebody other than the Department of Ag to do some of the administrative work. Down on line 2.28, it says checkoff fees. Any person, whether in Minnesota or elsewhere, that sells fertilizer to producers must collect a checkoff of 40 cents per ton of fertilizer sold and forward the checkoff funds at least semi-annually to the commissioner, along with forms provided by the commissioner. Go to page 3 of the bill. The top of page 3, it talks about the program account. It's established in the State Treasury and Agricultural Fertilizer Research and Education Program account in the Agricultural Fund. Now we go down to line 3.6. It says refunds. Now this is where some of the controversy comes in. And that is that the task force that we had could not agree to go forward with this program unless individual farmers had a chance to get their money back. And it's estimated the average farmer is going to could get a refund of $11 for his fertilizer checkoff. And the position I took last year was that I thought that was kind of ridiculous to spend a lot of money that the Department of Agriculture estimated they'd have to hire a full-time person to spend, I forgot what it was, $50,000 or something to send back about $16,000 worth of refund checks to 1,500 farmers. And for $11 or 4 to 8 cents an acre, it just seemed to me that every farmer in this state should be willing to pay for some fertilizer research. So the bill left this committee last year without that refund provision in there. And then the task force support collapsed because they had the deal. We agreed to do this, and we're not going to do it unless we get this $11 back per average refund. So this year we're back again, and I guess the $11 refund per farmer has got to stay in, even if it costs three times as much to send it back to them in order to get this thing to move forward. So what we got on the refunds here is that the producer must submit the refund request to the commissioner by February 28th each year for checkoff fees paid in the previous calendar year. So you've got, for example, 2008, you're buying fertilizer, you're using it, you've got until next February 28th to make application for this refund. Now, down on line 3.14, you'll see that this section applies January 8th, 2017, so this has got an end date. It's a 10-year deal. Move to Section 3, Minnesota Agricultural Fertilizer Research and Education Program. And that identifies what the eligible projects are. And I guess the rest of it is... Okay, another important point here is that on line 3.28 and 3.29, in order to get a project approved for research, you have to have a 67% or two-thirds majority vote in order to approve a research project. So the deal is we're going to tax or put a fee of 40 cents a ton on fertilizer, which is about 48 cents an acre, to fund critical research to help protect the environment and help farmers do a more efficient job of applying an expensive resource. Now, to testify, Mr. Chairman and members, I have some members of the task force that put this together. And I'd like to call Bill Bond up here and also Dr. George Ream. They can come together. And they have some information to provide to support the passage of this bill. And I have one more witness. His name is Kurt Burns, who will testify later. He's a farmer and crop consultant.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bill Bond. I'm representing the Minnesota Crop Production Retailers. I'll add just a few comments here as I served on the task force, and this is really a tribute, this work, to a lot of folks that spend considerable amount of time, including the chairman of the committee and Senator Dill and Representative Junkie and others, to really address what had started as a bill that was really an entitlement for the university to do research on fertilizer. it was clear that my members, who are those folks that provide crop inputs and advice to the producers of Minnesota, really felt that we needed a different approach, and that is that the industry itself that applies crop inputs, in this case specifically fertilizer, would really drive and steer the research, and that the university and others could participate as we define the research. It's really an attempt, I think, by the industry to say we want to be responsible to the environment, responsible to our members, responsible to good science, to do the best we can with the resources of fertilizer and nutrients for our crops. This is an increasingly important issue as we look at the crops being a source of fuel as well as food for not only our country but the nation. So as we looked at this, this is a compromise. I think most would agree that participated in the process that most people did not get everything they wanted. I don't think anybody did. There may be still controversies, and I want to say that our members want to make sure that our customers, that is the farmers of Minnesota, are satisfied with the result and are participating in this willingly. We think this, while this bill isn't perfect, it is a good step forward, and we'd support it as it moves forward in the process. I'd be happy to stand for any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Let's hear from your other witness, then we'll fire out some questions. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is George Ream. I live in Cannon Falls, Minnesota. I'm a private citizen now. I used to be University of Minnesota faculty member, but I retired. So I wanted to say that the decision you make on this bill is not going to affect me personally, but it's going to have an impact, a great impact on rural Minnesota, the economy of rural Minnesota. I think Senator Dill has done an excellent job of describing the product that the Ag Nutrient Task Force put together, and Mr. Bond has also done that. One point I would add to that is that what you have in this bill is a unanimous agreement among the members of the task force that were representative of farmer groups, representative of commodity groups, representatives of the ag professional industry, and the Minnesota fertilizer dealers. So this is a unique opportunity for all of agriculture in Minnesota to come together and stand behind one issue, and I think that that's notable. I think one thing that might get overlooked is the fact that these checkoff dollars, even though their general perception is that it's to support research, there's nothing to say that these checkoff dollars cannot support educational programs. If someone has a proposal that they want to submit to the council that's educational in nature, that will be considered. It's not strictly limited to the research. Both ends are open. I think another major thing is that the checkoff is voluntary. Therefore, it's not a tax. It can go back to the grower if that grower so wishes. I think that's another major point. To give you an idea of the economic benefit to the farmer of checkoffs, some are in place. For example, the sugar beet growers support research for the sugar beet industry. And one economic example that I can give you is within a period of 5 years, the sugar beet growers supplied checkoff dollars to Dr. John Lamb to look at nitrogen research. Those dollars totaled 40 cents an acre for that five-year period. As a result of that research, the individual soybean growers now receive to their their sugar beet check $44 an acre a year that they didn't have before the research was completed. That's a pretty good return on investment. Another major concern that Minnesota farmers have is a problem called iron deficiency chlorosis. My estimations are that this cost in gross return to the Minnesota farmer about $75 million a year. And the soybean growers, through their checkoff program, have provided funding for 7 years, totaling in the neighborhood of $200,000. We now have, as a result of those checkoff dollars, an explanation for the problem and some management practices that growers can use to address this problem. So those, the economic return is substantial. And then I wanted to emphasize also that the control of these dollars is in the hands of individuals who are vitally involved in agriculture in the state of Minnesota. That is the farmers, the agribusiness people, and the fertilizer industry as listed on in your bill as part of that council. Those are the highlights, the points that I would like to make, and I simply would urge a yes vote on this issue. I thank you for providing me the time to testimony, and I stand for any questions.
Another gentleman on that end of the table. State your name for the record and write up the committee.
Kurt Burns, independent crop consultant and also producer, Sibley County. I come here today in support of this bill, not only as a producer, but as an independent crop consultant. I represent about 100 growers in Sibley, McLeod, Renville, and Sibley County, Meeker County. This bill is very important to Minnesota agriculture, as we need independent research on our issues at hand with fertilizer recommendations. This is how I make recommendations to producers on trying to grow 200, 250 bushel corn. And with the continuous corn that we are now going to be facing in the state of Minnesota, more research needs to be done on an independent basis. And this bill represents that. And it is hard for someone not to have this independent research if the funding is not there. It is also a very concern that there are some in the industry that if there is not independent research, that recommendations can be made that are not beneficial to the growers. Any questions?
Senator Robes. Eric and Robes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Dill and gentlemen. I love looking at bills that are bicameral and bipartisan, and it sounds like you got a whole long list of stakeholders that you were talking about, the farmers, commodity groups, and that sort of thing. I heard several of you say some of the purposes of getting your groups together were looking at not only the fertilizer research, but you're very interested in protecting the environment, and you want this to be based on good science and do independent research. And I'm wondering about the stakeholders that are missing, and maybe it's just a situation of too many cats in the same bag. I don't know. But could you speak to why the university should not be included in this mix? And then I don't see any environmental groups in this mix either.
Senator Dill.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ropes, I believe you're looking at the council, the makeup of the council. And the council is made up of people that are going to benefit from the fertilizer research in terms of improving their productivity and efficiency. And I would presume the University of Minnesota would probably be one of the major recipients of research funds. And maybe Dr. Ream can tell me why the university is not listed there, but maybe it's because they are one of the major recipients. Now, on the environmental groups that you have observed are missing here, I believe we discussed that in the task force, but the task force was not made up of environmental groups. It was made up of producers trying to do a better job to protect the environment. I think all these groups that are listed there are environmental groups. Everybody's interested in the environment. So it's a group that got together and made the decision that something needed to be done. And maybe I'll ask Dr. Ream if he has any further comments beyond that.
Dr. Ream.
Senator Ropes and members, the university was represented on the Ag Nutrient Task Force. That was me. The university is not represented on the council. I think it's assumed but not written that the research proposals, many of those would come from university faculty. I think it's prudent that when this happens, a university person not be on the decision-making body as to how the money should flow. With respect to your environmental representation concern, I understand your concern. I understand where that would come from. I can tell you that in the six meetings that the Ag Nutrient Task Force had, everyone on that task force represented or understood that the research that would be conducted would simply not be production research, but would be both. The research to improve production while at the same time being very aware of the impacts on environmental implications. It's there, it's not written, but it was on the minds of every one of the members of the Ag Nutrient Task Force.
Senator Erickson Robes, I served on that task force. We spent a lot of time working on that. Our main goal was to, not so much the checkoff point, was the high price of fertilizer. If you can use less fertilizer, you actually gain. And that's what we were. That's where we're coming in as an environmental part of it. Wipe it on twice as much as you need, and that's what we were trying to accomplish. And I think that's what this accomplishes. Senator Dale.
Mr. Chairman, members, Mr. Jerry Schoenfield just reminded me of one factor here, and that is that the farmers are paying the bill on this, on the checkoff, and they felt they should be deciding how it's spent. And so the group that put this together are all helping pay the bill, so they should get to decide how it's spent. And the environmental groups weren't paying the bill.
I think Senator Scoobly was next.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Dale. If you could check page 3, line 8 there, that phrase has given me a little trouble, I guess. You know, it indicates that the producer would not be eligible to receive a refund if the checkoff fee is not remitted on a timely basis. I'm not sure, you know, why do we want to penalize the producer should they want their checkoff fee back just because their vendor failed to remit it on a timely basis?
Senator Dale.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kubley, which line are you referring to?
Page 3, line 8, Senator.
Senator Kubley, what page of the bill are you on?
Page 3, line 8, Mr. Chair. It just indicates that the producer might not get their money back if the person that collected the fee didn't submit it on a timely basis.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Kubley, and members, my impression from this sentence is it just reminds me of the federal farm program. There's all kinds of timelines there, and if you don't submit your paperwork on a timely basis, you're out of luck on various federal farm programs. And here these producers have until 2 months into the next year to file for their checkoff refund. They buy the fertilizer mostly in the spring, some in the fall, but most of it's in the spring. And they got the whole year plus 2 months into the next year until February 28th to file for their refund. That should be more than adequate.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Dill. I mean, you know, the sentence as it's written, as I'm understanding it anyways, it's, you know, I mean, the producer doesn't really have, they don't have a choice as to whether or not they pay the fee. They have to apply to get it back. But, you know, it says it'll have the fee refunded if the checkoff fee was remitted on a timely basis. Well, the fee is remitted when it's paid, is it not?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kubley, I believe that the person who is selling the fertilizer must submit the fee twice a year.
Mm-hmm. But Mr. Chair and Senator Dill, you know, if the person that sells the fertilizer doesn't remit it on a timely basis, why should the producer be penalized for the failure of their vendor?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Kubley, maybe there's some language changes or wordsmithing that would be appropriate in that section. Do you have any suggestions?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Dill, it would seem to me that if we just struck the phrase, if the checkoff fee was remitted on a timely basis, that would resolve that issue.
Senator Consul, can you help us here a little bit?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kubley, that would take care of your issue if that was just stricken from it. The only issue remaining is whether or not there would be farmers that would have to pay this because if they're buying it outside of the state. I don't know enough about exactly how the system would work, but that would be but that would take care of your concern if you just were to strike those everything before the period on line 8.
Yeah, I think that's okay.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think the consensus at the table is that if Senator Kubley wants to move to remove those few lines or a few words, I think that would be all right.
Well, Mr. Chair, then I would move on page 3, line 8, to strike the words, if the checkoff fee was remitted on a timely basis.
Everybody understand the Kubley motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted.
I didn't catch that.
We're going to have to, got some dates we're going to have to look at here, but maybe we should hear from one person. Well, I'm going to go back to Skoy here. Pardon me, I have two people want to talk here. I'm getting ahead of myself. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Dill, I'm glad to hear that. In your testimony, you did recognize this is a tax on the farmers and on the fertilizer that they're buying to apply. I've never been a big fan of this proposal. I always have thought that the Corn and Soybean Growers Association, and for that matter, the Growers Association that I belong to, would, through their associations, do their fertilizer research, and they could do it in conjunction with the University of Minnesota. I look at this and I don't see how we're going to address minor use crops. I don't see any way to address pastures. I think that, you know, this is an effort to apply this tax onto all the ag land in my friends sitting over here, corn growers, soybean growers, you know, sugar beet growers, wheat growers, you know, potato growers. I can see all they're represented on here, but I have concerns about this. It doesn't take into account any of the value of the crop that's growing, that's utilizing the fertilizer. And for me, I would rather see these growers association. They've already got checkoff processes in place. All the refund application processes in place if it's not mandatory. And I just think that these associations ought to be doing this on their own, and we shouldn't be trying to combine all of these differing associations into this one project. I don't see the gain, I'm not going to be supportive of this.
Sir?
Senator Skoy, members, I understand your concern, and this was a topic that was also addressed in the Ag Nutrient Task Force. There are several points to consider. If you look at the composition of the council, there's representation from the Irrigators Association, a representation from the wheat growers, representation from Farmers Union, from Farm Bureau. Farmers across the state of Minnesota grow a variety of crops. Corn growers produce soybeans, vice versa. Wheat producers in northwest Minnesota are grass seed producers, vice versa. So those crops are represented. They're not restricted or eliminated. The proposals that would be, as I perceive, submitted to the council, there's no control over who the subject matter of the proposal that comes in. The council decides based on the proposal whether this is worthy of funding or not. Those research proposals could come to look at the crops that are not corn, soybean, wheat. For example, somebody could submit a proposal for fertilizer management on alfalfa. this council would consider that proposal as it stands. And I'm sure that on that council there would be farmers that would grow alfalfa and could relate to it. So I believe it's all, I believe that it, from that aspect, all crops are covered, sir.
Senator Scoy, follow up.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and all of these associations can do research on their particular crops, and they have the processes in place. For me, it just seems to make more sense to keep these groups a little smaller. I think the producers have more input into the process if they're dealing within their own producer organization. As you make a bigger group, granted you get a bigger pool of money, but you're also establishing this tax statewide across all of agriculture, and I think individual production issues will have less ability to rise to the surface than they will in their own growers association. And you know, the grain and feed association, they can do some research on some of the feed stuff, that's fine. The irrigators, they can do research with regard to nitrogen placement and how they're getting that to tie into the soil. But I just don't see the gain going into a larger group to do research that can all be done as it is currently within all the confines that we currently have in place, and it'll be closer to the producer. It'll be smaller groups dealing with the local producers. So, I recognize the reason and the rationale for research. I pay checkoffs into my commodities. I go to my annual meetings. I argue for what I want done, and other producers do too, and sometimes I prevail and sometimes I don't. But I just think that this is not the best direction for us to be going with regard to our fertilizer research.
Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I thought I had heard that one of the witnesses say that the checkoff was voluntary. Did I not hear that correctly? You had said that?
Senator Chaudhry and members, yes. I said that because the way I interpret it, if I have an opportunity to receive a refund, I choose whether or not to leave those dollars in that checkoff fund or not. So I.
Oh, okay. In that manner.
That's my line of reasoning, sir.
I see.
Any other questions? Senator Hand?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to kind of pursue, I think, Senator Scoy's question a little bit, I'm assuming that the current structure research is being done by all the different groups. Can you go back and just maybe give us a little bit of a snapshot rationale for why that process hasn't been as effective as what this would be? I mean, just is there a short answer to that? Or do we have to go back and listen to the tapes of the task force in their entirety to get that?
Sure.
Senator Hamm, members, your concern and the concern of Senator Scoy is genuine. The commodity, let it be understood from my standpoint, from my opinion, that the support from the various checkoff programs from commodities has been excellent. I have no qualms, no reservations about what they provide. But that the support from a commodity organization, for example, sugar beet growers, that checkoff dollar goes to support varietal research, herbicide application, insecticide application, all the ramifications of sugar beet production. My testimony, a small percentage amounting to 40 cents an acre over 5 years went to soil fertility work. The challenges that farmers face in the immediate future are amazing. When you stop to think about, you've talked about the biofuels, the renewable energy concept. A person could sit down and there's much that needs to be done, but not enough dollars to do it, is what it boils down to. So these dollars are, the idea is to provide the support for the soil fertility component of that production system. And currently growers spend a very high percentage of their annual input dollar on fertilizer, therefore the justification for the research on the fertility component. Granted, yes, we have done research with other commodities supported by other commodity checkoffs, but we have much to do.
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bond have a comment.
Mr. Bond.
Mr. Chairman, and I very much respect the concern Senator Scoy has. It was discussed substantially at the task force. I think what was the compelling reason that the task force members representing all the groups you've mentioned with, as George has pointed out, even some of the smaller cropping systems. The reason they unanimously approved the report and requested this fund was because they saw the importance of the synergy of bringing these groups together to combine their funds with this targeted research, which we all agreed was not being done adequately. And I think that was the challenge that we faced in coming up with this recommendation. You may recall that I've been before this committee in years past opposing a fertilizer ton fee increase. It is not with excitement that we say we're going to go to our members and tell them, because as you are likely aware, this fee is paid in terms of who writes the check. It comes from the ag retailer. And, of course, the point being that we pass that on to our customers, the farmers. But we are currently paying a 30-cent fee on fertilizer for Department of Ag work. But this 40-cent additional fee is targeted to research that we concluded collectively was needed. And it will be combined with the funds from a number of the promotional councils as they determine, and they're all represented on this council. So we think we've addressed the issue you raised, but it is a very legitimate concern we discussed.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Scoy.
They're not, all 11 of the councils aren't represented here.
Mr. Bond.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, that's correct. When we looked at the use of fertilizer, we considered the cropping systems, and because of the size of the task force, we couldn't have everybody on. We certainly wanted to have the legislature represented, the department, and most of the major associations and councils that promote and do research. We didn't have them all just because of size.
Senator Dale.
Mr. Chairman, members, I do remember one part of a meeting that we had with this task force, and it was about the tremendous decline in resources for doing basic research, especially at the University of Minnesota and the Department of Soil Science. And although we can talk about money coming from other checkoff programs or from other sources, the fact of the matter is that research dollars have declined substantially. The consensus of the group, I think, was a unanimous conclusion that more research is needed for a variety of reasons, and we need to find some source to fund that.
Any other questions? Mr. Shadray?
Yes, Mr. Chair. There was a comment that the legislature was supposed to be represented on the council that you're proposing. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Shadray, I would have misspoke had I said that. What I meant to and intended to say was that the fertilizer nutrient task force was represented by the senators and representatives that served on it.
Just a quick follow-up on that.
Senator Shadray?
For most of these, you've got the corresponding association represented on the council, but with regards to sugar beets and potatoes, it's just a member from that industry. Is there not a sugar beet growers association or a potato growers association in Minnesota? And if there is, why wouldn't that particular association be referenced?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to defer to the representative of the sugar beet industry for that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, for the record. Bruce Clavin, I represent all three sugar companies in our state. American Crystal, headquartered out of Moorhead, Mindac in Wapton, North Dakota, and Renville, Southern Minnesota Sugar. They do not have a growers association for all three, but they have three companies. They do check off internally because they're all cooperatives. And so they take it out of the grower's check. They raise about $600,000 a year for research. A lot of that goes to NDSU. And so they have a system. It's just different than what you'd see for corn or wheat or one of the other groups.
Senator Chaudhry?
Last question. Section 1 has to do with storage of liquid commercial fertilizer on personal property. That doesn't seem to have anything to do with the creation of the research council. Do we know why that's in there? They don't seem to be related.
Doctor?
Senator Chaudhry, members, the charge to the Ag Nutrient Task Force was to look at four issues. And one of the issues was on-farm storage. And one was the fertilizer checkoff, and there were two others were dismissed rather rapidly and no decisions were made. The two parts of the bill that are before you, there was a decision on on-farm storage and there was a decision by the task force on the checkoff. So I assume, maybe I'm wrong, but these are combined into one bill to respond to the activity of the Ag Nutrient Task Force.
Mr. Bond.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Chaudhry, the other dynamic that was going on at the time that Representative Junkius developed this bill in the task force was the Department of Ag had started addressing the storage of liquid fertilizer. Nuclear fertilizer? liquid fertilizer on farm. And that was an issue that was in front of this group, and it was a convenient time to address what would be the appropriate amount to exempt from that regulation, essentially. And we got together and decided that while we were in a group representing the growers and the retailers.
Mr. Chair, shouldn't that be something that your new council researches?
Mr. Chairman, I think that was a consensus of the group that was there, and that's more of a regulatory affair of the Department of Ag.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Greg Bozicki. I'm the Division Director of Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division at the Department of Agriculture. And the Department of Agriculture was a member of this group and facilitated this, as you well know, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bond is correct, Senator Chaudhry. The issue of on-farm liquid fertilizer storage has been a growing issue, and it was one of the in the legislation that enacted that directed the task force. There were four issues that it was directed to work on: the checkoff fund, bulk liquid storage, methamphetamines, and other regulatory programs of the department. This language is also found in our budget bill. We're moving forward with this as well. It provides clarification so that the department will focus its efforts on bulk liquid storage of greater than 6,000 gallons of liquid fertilizer. As Dr. Ream had mentioned, through the task force discussions, it became the decision of the task force to recommend that we don't address this because that's generally the amount of bulk liquid fertilizer that is used, brought to farms, used in a short period of time right before planting, and it wasn't the amount of material that the department should focus its regulatory efforts on. So we'd be looking at liquid storage of larger amounts.
Mr. Chair, how big is a 6,000 gallon container? Is it as big as this table or half? Or give me a picture.
Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhry, a liquid tanker that we typically see on the roadway is about 3,200 gallons, if it's not, I believe, is the amount. What the task force was looking at is that amount delivered being used then by farmers, drawn down, and having a replacement amount put in that tank that they have on their property so they can use it for, as it's commonly used as pre-plant or with herbicide applications. If you could picture, it's somewhat larger than a tanker truck is what we're looking at.
Mr. Chair, it seems like it's twice as much, twice as big.
Mr. Chair, yes, that's correct.
Mr. Chair, are they normally stored above ground or underground? Is there typical placement?
Mr. Chair, Senator, they're typically above ground. The department has regulations. These are highly regulated on facilities, agricultural facilities. But the materials that are commonly used for long-term storage are in the neighborhoods of 20, 30, 40, 50,000 gallons. So if a facility, bulk liquid fertilizer facility, agricultural facility, is in this business, that's the kind of materials they're storing. If it is a farmer using it for crop purposes, they're dealing with much smaller amounts. We do have a cleanup program that's been in operation for years, authorized by the Groundwater Protection Act, so we're very familiar with these kinds of storage materials, proper containment, and the kinds of incidents that can come about as a result of this. So our focus in terms of regulation is on the much larger amounts rather than the smaller amounts that are used in a short period of time.
Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair and members, just kind of for clarification, I'm not sure I understood the explanation of the size. One of those straight trucks that you see around, that's probably around 3,200. A semi-trailer would be between 7,000 and 8,000 gallons.
I see.
Senator Dale.
Mr. Chairman, members, 6,000 gallons could be used up in 2 days on many farms when they're busy planting. So it really isn't. It's here today and gone in a day or two. And some of these structures are mobile, so you move them around from field to field.
Senator Chaudhry.
Mr. Chair, and then on the exemption language, the new language that says a permit and safeguard is not required. I understand what a permit probably is, but what is a safeguard that will no longer be required under this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhry, safeguard is it is the containment around the facility that would be required to capture a spill in the event one should occur. So that's the structure. There's various types that are new. Some are portable, some are cement, some are built out of impermeable materials. It all depends on the circumstances.
Senator Engelbertson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to ask, you mentioned methamphetamines. Explain that to me.
Mr. Chair, Senator, methamphetamine is anhydrous ammonia is used for methamphetamine, and the Department of Agriculture responds to all agricultural chemical spills of one sort or another. The legislature was interested in seeing if there was any additional safeguards that could be applied to anhydrous ammonia or any precautionary steps that could be taken to help limit the accessibility of anhydrous ammonia to people who are making methamphetamine.
Thank you. I understand that.
Members, I'm marching the clock, and I have one person who would like to speak in opposition to the bill. So maybe if you could just step aside a little bit and Mr. Peterson, if you'd come up.
Your testimony.
Welcome to the committee and state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union. And today I'd like to speak in opposition of Section 2 of Senate File 655 as introduced. We do see that a lot of the need that Professor Ream talked about and that Senator Dill has made a good case for on fertilizer research. But plain and simple, as our members have had time to look at this bill and we've run this bill up the flagpole, as you said, for a year and a half, we've had time to visit with our members about this. And they've told us that they, first of all, look at this bill as another checkoff. And dairy farmers especially have told me that, you know, I pay a dairy checkoff. If I go corn and beans, I pay a corn and bean checkoff. And then I call a cow, I pay a beef checkoff. And now I'm going to pay a fertilizer checkoff. And so that's where a lot of the concern comes from. And as Senator Skoy says, the farmers tell us that I thought that that's what a lot of our checkoff dollars were already going was to do some of this research. And as we say on this, too, of the bill is important. I always tell the farmers, too, I'll say, yeah, but you're not actually paying this. It's the retailer that's going to pay this, and then they'll, you know, probably pass it on to you. They always laugh because they know that they're going to get it passed on to them. So, and we have decided that it's a fee, not a tax. We would throw out, though, as we were members of the task force, and we did kind of agree that this bill got as good as it could get if we were going to have this. It was kind of our position, and then we would take it back to our members and, as I said, run it up the flagpole. But our members came back and told us that if we do have this bill, we would prefer what we call a point-of-sale option, so that when you go to buy the fertilizer, at that point, you would just decide if you're the farmer. They say, you know, I call the co-op or whatever, and I say I'd like to buy fertilizer. And at that point, they'd say, would you like to, you know, pay an extra $5 for fertilizer research or $10 and handle it that way? I also look at the fiscal note, and I don't know if the Department of Ag looked at that option or not. I discussed it with them as a possibility. The refundability, as I said, for a lot of the groups was key. Our farmers do question a lot of times how that money is spent, and did also question about that we supported, though, if we do have the bill, that MDA does be the fiscal agent for it, and then we do have concerns that in 2008, we don't know who's going to be the fiscal agent for this, and not sure, you know, who we're comfortable with handling that. And so I think there is a lot of issues with that. Our members also told us that it is, even though it is pennies per acres, that input costs are very high right now. They have soared, and it would raise it per acre. As Mr. Bond said, this fee was 15 cents a ton for about 20 years, and then 2 years ago, the legislature raised it another 15 cents to 30 cents, and now this bill would raise it to 70 cents. I would say that in closing, our members are concerned about the adverse impacts of fertilizer on the environment and the increasing, and we want to increase our yield by potentially better managing the fertilizer issues. But this bill also does set a precedent for research funding. So we're setting up a proposal saying this is how we're going to start funding our research individually on issues like this, and we're concerned about that precedent that you're considering today. And we also have been very strong in saying that this bill, the university should be doing this funding, and that we're concerned about cutbacks that we've seen in extension and where our soil samples go and our help that we get from extension. We're concerned about the money that the state puts into research at the University of Minnesota. And that this is money, if we're going to do this, should come out of the general fund, perhaps, and we should be funding this. Our farmers say, isn't this a land-grant university? It's supposed to help our farmers. So that, coupled with the checkoff dollars they already have, gets a little frustrating to them when they look at this proposal. And I can very comfortably say, again, in closing, too, that I have talked with farmers in just about everybody's district here, maybe except for Senator Hahn and Senator Chaudhry's, and they're just not fired up about this. And they would, you know, if you look at this bill and it gets laid over, that you look at some kind of option. I would mention that Senator Representative Junkie is going to have a stakeholder group meeting tomorrow to look at this issue and see if there's things we can work out. So thank you.
Mr. Peterson, I share your concerns too, but if I can save, and I'll use my son as an example, if I can save some fertilizer that he'd have, fertilizer's high, I think he'd be more than willing to kick something in to help with that research. It's no different than trying to buy diesel fuel. diesel fuel is he contracted it, but wasn't over a week and well, 50 cents higher. So, and it's a kind of the same thing, but you can get your money back unless I'm not reading this bill right. Senator Dale, is that right? If you want your money back, you can just ask for it. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, members, by February 28th of the following year, if you apply for it, by that date, you'll get your refund.
I'm going to go to Senator Hand next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Peterson. And I do want to acknowledge that I do have 100% of the support of all the farmers in my district. And Seaver Peterson is a corn grower, and so he's not contacting me about this. So as far as I know, he doesn't have a concern on this issue, so I'm taking that as he's okay with this bill. But one question I have for you, your organization is listed as specifically a member of the council that's being created, and given that you're saying you're opposed to this bill, would it be your preference that your organization be removed from membership of the council then as well, and would that be an amendment that you'd like to see happen to the bill?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members, and I did discuss that when we had a meeting in January with 70 of our county presidents. We had excellent turnout, and I posed that to them, that very question. I said, you know, if we're opposing this, that means you're off the council. And they were very strong, though, on the point-of-sale option, the refund deal. A lot of times you do have issues with checkoffs, and they're very strong on that refundable part. And now, so you're a farmer, you want a refund, and it bugs you, you got to, you know, sit down and fill out the refund, and you got to send it back in and with whatever, and it's back on you. And so if that's what it is, yeah, we're okay with that. And but we would have liked to have seen it worked out this way. So
I'm going to go to Senator Hand. You follow up, or are you done?
Well, and Mr. Chairman, I guess what I'm just trying to, since your organization is listed as a, by in the statute, if it passes, that your organization would be a member. And I'm trying to understand if you're saying you do not want to be a member, do we need to have an amendment to take that line 2.2 out of the bill?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hand, I'm fine with that as the bill is currently drafted.
Senator Skoglin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dale, my father and I have never used liquid fertilizer. Is it also bought by the ton? Is this 40 cent applied to dry and liquid fertilizer both?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoglin, yes. It's sold by the ton, and the fee is per ton.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Coring.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Point, Mr. Chair.
No, I would yield to Senator Scully.
Members, what you need to think about fertilizer is, yes, it is sold by the ton, but there's different concentrations of active ingredient. If you buy anhydrous ammonia, you get 83% nitrogen in it. If you buy urea, it's 46% nitrogen in it. And if you buy liquid, it's some smaller number. So, it's not a real fair mechanism that's being in place because you get differing amounts of active ingredient in each kind of ton, and of course they're priced accordingly, but this doesn't have anything to do with that, and it has nothing to do with the value of the crop that's being grown or the ability of that farmer to pay or not pay the tax.
Well, Mr. Chairman, remember, just one comment. We're talking probably 4 cents per acre, maybe 8 cents per acre, depending on how much you put on. And you look at the revenue off of an acre of cropland, it's in the $200 to $600 range or $150 to $800 range. I mean, it's with the price of corn the way it is right now, there's a lot of revenue coming off of each acre. And to think of the 4 to 8 cent cost per acre, I think Senator Scoy is making a good point in a way, but to make this thing really complicated and try to tailor it to different fertilizer concentrations would make it more complicated than necessary.
And follow up?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Dill, but wouldn't the best way to do this be to take some state general fund dollars and appropriate them to do fertilizer research?
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, that would be a great idea if we could do it. But then on the other hand, the $880,000 would be raised each year in this proposal is benefiting those that are paying the bill, and the $880,000 maybe should be used for education or taking care of our veterans or early childhood education, or there's a lot of places to put $880,000.
Let's go ahead.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dill, but we all pay, you know, you're taking money out of Minnesotans' pockets one way or the other, and it just seems to me that would be a more fair mechanism to do it differently. I'm not going to stand in your way, you know, if this gets laid over and they're going to be a stakeholder meeting tomorrow and maybe they can make some changes and some improvements, you know, go ahead. I just think that, you know, this is not the best mechanism for finding research dollars. I don't like some of the structure of it. I worry about the minor use crops. And as I said before, I think all of this can happen already with the current structure that we have. But if there's a large enough coalition of people that think this ought to go forward, well, I'm not going to stand in the way.
Well, Senator Scoy, this bill's got two stops, I know for sure. So we have time to see what the House members are, what they're doing. I'm going to go to Mr. Bond. Did you have a question?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, the task force addressed that specific issue because that is a real fair question if you're talking about fairness. The concern was that researchers really need to understand that a fund is going to be there for a number of years. And with the biennial budget process, there was a concern that there just wouldn't be the kind of long-term research that was necessary. So that's why they went with this. Thank you.
Now, Senator Corey.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And you just said that this has another stop to make. Where would that be, Mr. Chair? A couple more stops.
Senator Corey, if it's lucky enough to make it out of this committee, it goes to state and local government operations because of the study. Then it will come back. It'll go to finance, and then it'll come back to our ag budget division. So it's am I right?
Because of the creation of the council.
The council is why it's going to
okay.
Senator Rest's committee.
And then, I do agree with Senator Scully, and I guess I'm just kind of wondering what we should do. So I guess I would just say that it seems like we got to work on this a little more, being that we have, you know, usually we're unanimous in here. We have some disagreement, so I would just say that I don't know if this is going to work, but I'm going to move to table this bill, table Senate file 655, so that we can find out what the stakeholders meeting has tomorrow, and then we can bring this bill back.
Mr. Coy.
Mr. Chair, and I'm not trying to move this bill along, and I appreciate your efforts, but I think I heard the chairman say that this bill is going to come back to us as the Ag Finance Committee.
Okay.
I think if we table it, it's going to kind of stall out.
Mm-hmm.
Let Senator Dill make his trip over to the committee that deals with this because of the council startup. We'll come back and deal with this as the Ag Finance Division would be my recommendation.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, then I would withdraw my motion, and I'm hoping that all the parties involved would work together on this, and hopefully when it comes back here, we'll all be liking it. So,
Senator Croying, I'll speak for myself and Senator Dill, and we went through hours and hours and hours of testimony to get this far. A lot of us were just saying, why'd we even want to be on this? That's how tough it was. I made a mistake. I said, too, I'm not so sure this might have to go through three committees before we're done. Senator Robes.
Senator Vickerman, thank you. Senator Dill, I have a question for Mr. Peterson. Do you or what do your members think about Section 1? We talked about that a little bit. Senator Chaudhry brought up the permit and safeguard. Do you have any concerns about that? Is that the current requirement and that's being waived? That's one question. And then, Mr. Peterson, what do you think about that?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Ropes, it's kind of funny, but you get so wrapped up in a bill, and I was really concentrating on the second part. But in reading the first part, as we've been sitting here and listening to testimony, we did support that provision. And I I'd have to ask the department about what the current law is too and everything now, but we did have members that store that kind of stuff on their farm now, as you heard, in a couple of days. So they did support that, and I do recall. And again, this has been, we've been working on this for about almost 2 years, and so it's been about 2 years since people were calling about that. Actually, they were in Senator Kubley's district that were concerned about this piece, so we do support that.
Sir?
Senator Vickerman, for the record, Greg Bozicki from the department. Senator, there is no de minimis level right now in our bulk liquid fertilizer storage statute. So it's any amount. We did have a rule-making effort a number of years ago, but we did not bring that to fruition because of resources at the time. And so that's why it was brought, that's why it was studied in this task force. And the recommendation was either by rule or by statute establish this number, because this was the, I think the task force felt it was the common sense number.
Well, members, I think we need to, does anybody else in the audience speak for or against? Mr. Peterson, I want you to be aware that this is an ag committee. We want to do what we best we can for farmers. So we're willing, and we keep an open mind in this committee as it moves through the next two or three, if we can figure out some way to get a comfort zone.
I appreciate that, sir.
Mr. Schoenfeld.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jerry Schoenfeld. I work with both the Minnesota Soybean Growers and the Minnesota Pork Producers. I just wanted to mention one thing, and maybe it's a little off the side to this, but the Minnesota Soybean Growers does support this particular piece of legislation, and the pork producers that I work with are not listed in the membership. But I think one of the things that you should be recognized here is that research is very important to all commodity groups. But one of the reasons that people are willing to, in a sense, tax themselves is something that I don't think has been talked about much here, and that's part of control. Part of the purpose here was the idea that people would have control as to how these funds were spent. I think Senator Scoy had mentioned about why don't we use more general fund dollars and increase funding at the university, and I think everybody would be in favor of that. But this particular committee, as an example, has made appropriations over the years to increase funding to the university. I know last year Senator Dill, for instance, carried one on the vet diagnostic lab that went through here. But in terms of general control, when the money goes to the university, it's in a large pot, and there isn't much for input from the farm standpoint. And that, I think, is one of the things that helped drive this bill. And I just wanted to mention that because it is direct farmer control was one of the considerations, I think, as to why people were willing to put their funds forth in this. I think people would rather that the university was funded enough and that there was enough close ties to the agricultural community that would happen. And I would also tell you that in the last year or so, the university has improved their communications with farm groups and so forth. But I think that was one of the issues here that maybe is missed a little bit, is the opportunity to actually control what the money would be used for.
Thank you. Senator Dill, Senate Consul's got some dates we need to clean this bill up a little bit, and if you could do that.
Mr. Chairman, a couple of issues wanted to bring forward. There, one has to do with the internal dates within it. They don't seem to be consistent with the effective date of the bill. I'd like to talk about some of the non-date items. On line 2.10, on page 2, line 10, you've got the council may add ex officio members to the council. Is this, do you mean non-voting, or do you mean as according, because ex officio means as according to office. You'd have to say non-voting if you wanted them to be non-voting. And I think what you mean is non-voting members there. And so I think what you want to do is delete ex officio and insert non-voting.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I think that's okay. I don't remember the exact discussion on that sentence, but that sounds like that's what we want.
And then, Mr. Chairman, on line 2.28, it says whether in Minnesota or elsewhere. I think you want to be abundantly clear there, whether located in Minnesota or outside the state. So it would be after whether, insert located, and delete elsewhere, and insert outside of the state. So that would be very clear. And then I'll get to the dates. I think this might still have the dates from last year in it. If you look on 2.22, you see, well, actually, 2.21, 2.22, you've got January 1, 2008. This is, but after January 1, 2008, the council may select a commissioner or any person. And then later on, it says the commissioner does it for the first year, but this whole section doesn't become effective till January 1st of 2008. So I think you want that to be 2009. Delete on 2.22, delete 2008, insert 2009. And then also on 2.26, it says, or 2.25 and 2.26, it says no later than October 1st, 2007, the commissioner must provide the council. Well, the council doesn't exist until 2008. And I wonder if that date shouldn't be 2008, because as I understand this, for the first full program year, the commissioner does all of the administrative parts, and then for the second year, second and subsequent years. So it would seem to me that you would that date should be 2008 also on 2.26. And then if you look on page 3, it has on page 3, line 10, it says, for checkout fees paid after January 1st, 2007, I think that should be 2008, because there would be no fees paid in 2007, because this program wouldn't start till 2008. And then, so then also on line 11, it should read, the 2008 should be stricken in both places and insert 2009, because the fees won't be paid until 2008. I think these are dates that were left over from last year's bill. It'd just be updating those dates to reflect the new dates.
Anything else, Senator Council?
Mr. Chairman, that's it.
Senator Dill, would you like me to have Council go through that and put it into one motion?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I understand what Mr. Knopf said, and I think he's correct. So that can be incorporated into into one motion.
Mr. Chairman, would you also want the expiration date to be a year later then also?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scogin, that's a good point. When I was looking at this, last year they had it running for 2 years, but they didn't change the ending date. And that's actually a good point. I didn't know why the same ending date was left in. But Mr. Chairman, Senator Scogin, you could on page 3, line 14, and page 3, line 35, change those to 2018 if you want this to still be a 10-year program.
Okay.
Okay, Senator Dill, you want to incorporate all those in one motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Everybody understand the Dill motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. As I said before, members, this bill's got a little work to do on it, because we want to be sure that every farmer organization, we're all on the right track. It'll go from here, if we can move it from here, it'll go to state and local government operations. And it also may, I have to talk to Senator Chaudhry, it may have to go to his committee. Eventually, it'll get back, I'm going to call it our committee, to make the final ag part of the bill. So the motion should be, unless there's more questions, the motion should say we recommend to pass as amended and be re-referred to the state local government operations. And we'll go from there. In the meantime, we'll find out what the House is doing and if we need some more corrections. So is that okay, Senator Dill? You meet motion.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that's fine.
Senator Dill moves that Senate file 655 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to state local government operations. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. All members, that looks like that's it. So
we'll leave nothing.
Our turn.
Once in a while.
Look at that a while ago.